Blog Talk Radio.
The Boxing Fix.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, boxing fans of all ages, we welcome you in once more to another episode of The Boxing Fix on Leap in the Ring Radio and Block Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joel Sebastianelli. Alongside me, as always, my co-host out in Los Angeles, California, Josh McDaniel. Josh, another great week of fights, and a lot of fights, too, that people didn't think were going to be that good, but we had plenty of upsets, plenty of action. It turned out to be a fantastic weekend to be a fan of the Sweet Science.
Yeah, most definitely. It was a great weekend. Friday, it started off nice with Friday night fights and everything that went on Friday. And then it topped it off with a great Saturday night last night, man. And it was very enjoyable. A lot of great fights to watch, and we got a good little treat this whole weekend, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Not for my predictions, though. My prediction leagues just went for a complete loop. Glenn Johnson, I picked him to win. I picked the Polka to beat Castillo. That obviously did not go well. Not many people had Danny Garcia defeating Amir Khan, especially not in that fashion. That was a fantastic fight while it lasted. Just an all-out war. I didn't get that. I thought Derek Chisora would pick up the victory over David Haye, and that just didn't work out either. Plenty of surprises, but it was all-out action throughout the entire weekend. What was your favorite fight?
I'm going to have to really go with the Garcia-Khan fight. If we're talking about televised ones, for sure, that's definitely one. I was shocked. And first of all, I wanted to say this on top of the show. Damn, Al Haymon, all of Al Haymon fighters were just winning this whole weekend, man. So Al Haymon's still a happy man, you know, over there. But, man, I'm telling you, I did not even expect Garcia to do what he did, let alone win. And I'm eating crow. I said a lot of things on Twitter, and I was wrong. I'll be the first one to man up and say I was wrong. But that was a great fight. But that whole card sounded like it was good just to be in Vegas and be watching that live if you were able to attend it.
Yeah, and if you wanted to go and you were in that area, you absolutely could have. Plenty of empty seats at the Mandalay Bay, unfortunately. But if you went, it was a great fight card. A lot of good prospects on that card. Just turned out to be a really, really solid night and just a solid weekend of fights overall. With that, we'll send you into the boxing fix, give you a quick look at everything that happened across the sport before we get into more detailed recaps. Of course, it all started Friday night at the University of Illinois Chicago Pavilion in Chicago, Illinois on ESPN2's Friday night fights. In the main event, it was the end of an era for Glenn Johnson, the Road Warrior, in what was his 70th career fight. He lost to Andrew Funfar, the Polish sensation. Funfar improves to 22-2 with 12 knockouts, picking up a unanimous decision win, 97-93, 97-93, 99-91. Also on that card, on the undercard, Jose Luis Castillo picking up the victory over Ivan Popoka. The fight was stopped at the conclusion of the eighth round. Not something that anybody saw coming at all, especially not in this fashion. Popoka was down in the second round, had a nasty cut over the left eye in round number three from an accidental headbutt. Jose Luis Castillo, dare I say he actually looked pretty good?
That's crazy that you said that. I also owe him an apology. I owe him an apology. I think I might have said this on the show last week. Last night I thought about him making weight. So congratulations to him for even making – that was a victory in itself right there. But, man, again, I was shocked too. Not only did he make weight, but he looked good and won and in good fashion. Man, he bloodied that dude up.
Oh, absolutely. Popoka, in his first fight since losing to Ruslan Provodkinov just over a year ago, he's the one who looked old. Exactly what we thought Jose Luis Castillo was going to look like. heading into that fight, that's what Popoka looked like. The roles were just totally reversed, and it was an awful performance for Ivan Popoka, who, at this point, I don't even know what to say, because I'm not sure if he made Jose Luis Castillo look good, or if Castillo somehow turned back the clock and actually looked decent. It wasn't beautiful by any stretch of the imagination, but it got the job done. Also on Friday in Australia, Billy Dibb in the super featherweight division improved to 35-1 with 21 knockouts, unanimous decision win over Juan Antonio Rodriguez, 97-94, 98-92, 99-92. Dibb was cut above the left eye in round number 4 and above the right eye in round 10, but the decision was never in doubt. Dibb, also his brother fighting on that card too, he improved to 9-0 with 4 knockouts, defeating Wee Jung Kim by an AMS decision, 98-93, 99-92, 97-94. Both of the Dibbs in action, not big names in America, and I don't even think a lot of people knew that Billy Dibb was fighting, but he's a solid name, and he picks up another victory and keeps on cruising.
Yeah, that's something I was going to say, too. I don't think a lot of people knew he was fighting. I didn't know until, I think, the day of, or maybe the day before, during, you know, I'm looking at the weigh-ins and stuff. And I saw he was fighting, and I was like, oh, wow, cool, you know. I always like to watch how Billy Dibb fight every once in a while, you know. So, but it was a good fight for him. He managed a victory to pick up, and it was I guess, easy fight for him, you know. But, like I said, it was a victory. He needed to pick up.
Yep, he took care of business and did exactly what he set out to do. Earlier in the year, Mikhail Zorro's fight against Zatarbek Baysangarov was a bona fide fight of the year candidate, one of my favorite fights of 2012 thus far, and certainly not going to be in the discussion, even though a lot of people don't know about it. It was a fight of the year candidate for sure. Zorro, losing that fight, had a bounce-back fight, a victory, a knockout in the opening seconds of round number 1. He defeated Magomed Abdurakhmanov. Abdurakhmanov falls to 17-6, never fought anybody of note. Zorro improves to 19-1 with 12 knockouts. And then we move on to Saturday, when there were just great fights throughout the day. Of course, in the heavyweight division, the real story was David the Haymaker Hay glassing Derek Chisora. Beat him up and beat him down, knockout in round number 5. First of all, I picked Chisora to win that fight. Second of all, did you think that David Haye was really going to come out like this? I was surprised how big a betting favorite David Haye was, because I know that Vladimir Klitschko is a totally different animal, but he just folded up and just folded like a deck of cards. He was absolutely awful against Klitschko, almost made it seem as though he made no attempt to actually win the fight. To go from that to transform into what we saw against Derek Chisora, very impressive performance. Great stuff. Easily the best that Hayes looked in the heavyweight division since he moved up from cruiserweight.
It was a great performance by him, a horrible performance by Chisora, who I thought was dreadful just to watch him alone in the ring. I'm glad David Haye picked it up. I, as well, was going for Chisora. I mean, just like you, I had a horrible weekend picking fights. I don't know what happened, but it was just a bad weekend. But, you know, this is the type of stuff that I'm okay with picking wrong, you know, picking the wrong fighters if I'm wrong in such a good way like this, you know, with great fights. But I'll tell you this. I'm going to say one thing I am disappointed in. A lot of people were congratulating both of them and how they, you know, good sportsmanship, how they hug after that. Let me just tell you, if someone ever glossed me, I'm never hugging them after the fight. I don't care. So I was a little upset that they hugged it out. I thought it was a little too much hype, but it was a great fight for Haye. I think Haye looked great. It was great to watch him. And I'm actually interested in seeing him fight, the Klitschko game, the other one. Is it Vitaly or what? I always get confused with those two.
I don't want to see him fight either of them. The fight against Vladimir was so bad that I'd rather have David Haye just pick off guys like Marco Huck, Alexander Povetkin, guys that are certainly very talented heavyweights and could make for interesting fights, but certainly no one along the Klitschko's line, because there's just no way he beats them, and it'll be the exact same thing. I'm glad they hugged it out, because it was a decent fight while it lasted, but I have no desire to see a second one, and you know that would have been the logical route given all of the build-up for them to just make that fight again if they had started talking trash after the fight. So I suppose it works off better this way. heading stateside at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Amir Khan was a heavy betting favorite over Danny Garcia. Garcia shocked Khan and the world, exposed Amir Khan's chin, and improved to 24-0 with 15 knockouts. A fourth-round TKO knocked Khan down in round number three at the conclusion of the round. He was saved by the bell, then knocked him down twice in round number four before Kenny Bayless called a halt to the contest. A beatdown in rounds three and four, but how about the heart for Amir Khan?
I don't know. I'm not going to give him that much credit. How about a great fight by Danny Swift Garcia, proving me, shutting my mouth up. I went out there. I'm a man of my word. I'm not going to take back my tweets. I said that, you know, I've always thought Garcia was just an average fighter. Well, and I've never been the big guy on Khan either, but I thought Khan was going to destroy the kid, and man, was I wrong. And Garcia proved to me. I don't believe in my tweet anymore. I don't think he is just an average fighter. I think he's actually a talented kid now. You know, that proved a lot. I'm not going to say too much about Khan having heart or whatever. I think he's an excuse maker, and he tried his hardest for a while, but I don't care, man. I can't take anything away from Garcia. I just want to concentrate on Garcia now, man.
Yeah, Fernando Guerrero picked up a win on that card. He improves to 24-1. Didn't get a knockout, though. It was a unanimous decision, but nearly a shutout. 100-89, 100-89, 99-90 over Jose Medina. Jamie Kavanaugh, who we had on the show last week, he picked up a unanimous decision win, a shutout in the 8-round fight. Didn't drop Paul Verlarde, but still looked pretty solid and improved to 11-1 with 5 knockouts. Undefeated welterweight Phil LoGreco improved to 24-0 with 13 knockouts. It only took him 86 seconds to dispose of Brandon Hoskins in round number one. Abner Cotto in the lightweight division, he's now 14-0 with 6 knockouts. 1 minute and 3 seconds into round number eight, he defeated Juan Montiel, dropping Montiel to under 500, 5-6-3 on his career. And one of the guys I'm very high on in the middleweight division, Jaleon Love, improved to 12-0. 7 knockouts, a unanimous decision win over Joseph De Los Santos, 80-70 across the board.
Yeah, you know, there's a few of those guys on there that I'm high on. You know, I've kind of watched and see Fernando Guerrero train because he's training currently at the Ted Goose Boxing Gym out here down the street from my house. He's training with a new trainer from over there. Well, he's not new. He's been one of Joe's like understudies for a while, Ricky Punes. He's training with him. And Fernando looked good. He dropped his opponent, I think, a couple times. Phil LoGreco, another guy, he's, you know, I've been watching him for a while. He looked good. But Jaleon Love, man, I like this guy, man. I'm really up on this guy. He's a great fighter. He's a very talented kid. He's training out at the Mayweather gym, too, if I'm not mistaken. So they all put on great performances. I think this was a good card, like I was saying, that to be able to see these up-and-coming kids, you know, get in the ring, you know, get back in the ring, you know, for guys like Fernando, who's taking one loss, but he's on his comeback trail, and guys like LoGreco and Jaleon Love trying to get more action and more exposure. It was a great card. Joel dropped? I think we dropped Joel by accident here. You get him back on in a second. So let's see, where am I going to talk about with you guys, man? So anyways, we have that card.
Don't worry about it. I'm back on. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah.
Sorry, I don't know what happened. The Skype connection was breaking up there. Let's see, where were we? Kalia, home of the Chavez family and also of the Hernan Marquez fight. He defeated Fernando Lumacod by majority decision. That was on Azteca. That was last night, also on the card, Tomas Rojas, Juan Manuel de los Reyes Herrera. Hernan Marquez, somebody who, of course, boxing fans are pretty familiar with from his bouts on Showtime and a couple of places. I believe he's had at least one fight on Showtime. Doesn't fight on there frequently, but his fight against Luis Concepcion the first time in 2011, a TKO in round number 11, that was without a doubt, that was actually my favorite fight from 2011. That was my fight of the year. I favored it over Ortiz and Berto and plenty of other stuff. Good to see him back in action, even though his opponents haven't been quite at the top of the super flyweight division like he is.
Yeah, it's always hard to kind of get a read on him, you know, because kind of what you're just saying with the opponents, you know. But, you know, I do wish to see him more. That's something that would be nice to get him back on Showtime and see him a lot more with more credible opponents, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one that I thought, because we're focusing on some undercard fights and some stuff that's not necessarily all on TV, out in your neck of the woods, Ontario, California, and Televisa, Horacio Garcia picked up a victory. He improves to 19-0 with 13 knockouts and unanimous decision win over Rodolfo Landeros for the WBC Youth World Super Bantamweight title. The WBC Female Flyweight title on the line. Mariana Juarez defeated Shindo Go by split decision 96-94, 96-94, 93-97. Solid night of fights all the way around. And we got a great show for you tonight. The two combatants involved on the ESPN2 Friday Night Fights card from the Resorts Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City on July 27th, Hank Mundy will be on later at approximately 9:15 Eastern. He's 22-1-1. He'll be fighting Raymundo Beltran, who we will have on the show first. We'll have Ray coming on at approximately 8:45 Eastern, 5:45 Pacific. You're going to want to tune in. Be sure to tell all your friends and family about us here at the Boxing Fix. And, of course, we're not the only Leave It in the Ring product out there.
No. We got a lot, man. We got Monday nights. We got for the Spanish audience out there, Noche de Boxeo. We got that at 5 Pacific. Go ahead and make sure you guys check that out. And on Thursdays, also at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, 3 hours of Box Talk, Leaving the Ring Radio, hosted by Dave Glennis and the Dark Clock Gabriel Montoya. So go ahead and check that out. And make sure all you boxing addicts out there, you get your boxing fix online. You know, you got leaveitintheringradio.com, but not to mention, you got to go on Undisputed Fight Magazine. UndisputedFightMag.com. Go ahead and get your subscription there. Great stuff. Great articles from all different talented writers all over the world, from Joel to myself to everybody. Everyone's out there. Vicky, all of them. So make sure you go ahead and get that, man. It's great. If you're a boxing addict, and a boxing fan, boxing head, whatever you want to call yourself, that's something that you must pick up.
Brian Bitten from Sweet Boxing will be coming on the show a little bit later as well. But that does it for the Boxing Flips. We'll get right into the thick of things, starting with Friday night. Glenn Johnson and Andrew Fonfara. A unanimous decision win for Fonfara. Very little controversy here. Just about everybody I saw had the fight 97-93 for Fonfara, just as judges John McCarthy and Jerry Jacobo did. William Lurch had it 99-91. Don't think you really could have given Johnson this fight, but the Road Warrior going out in, I think, a way that's very fitting of his career against an opponent fighting in his hometown and just going out unceremoniously. Sometimes he wins, sometimes he loses. Nobody ever makes a big deal of it, but you know something? This guy would fight anywhere throughout the course of his 70-fight career, and he has more respect than most people in the sport, in my eyes. He's just one of those fighters that comes around every so often, but not all that frequently, especially now when we're in the age of protecting fighters and not letting guys go out like that. In all honesty, I think one of the guys that we can start comparing him to, perhaps, you know, maybe a few years down the road, I'm wondering if Derek Chisora is going down that road. Now, of course, he carries himself totally different than Glenn Johnson, but you want to talk about guys who can fight anywhere, anytime. Glenn Johnson is up there with the best of them in the history of sport of boxing. Sad to see him go out like this.
I wouldn't say sad to see him go out like this necessarily. He went out the way his career has kind of been, you know what I mean?
Yep, exactly.
So I wouldn't say it's something sad. You know, it was funny. I was talking with my buddy about it, and what I felt is even though I knew the fight wasn't close, it's like you almost feel you almost want to give Glenn Johnson some rounds that even though he didn't clearly win, you just want to give it to him just because you feel bad for the guy, like for all the close decisions he's lost about his career. You know, he has a pretty nice career. It was good to see him. It's just kind of weird to see him on Friday Night Fights. That's what was weird to me. You know, but good job by Fonfara, and he brought out a nice little crowd out there. Those Polish fans, man, they look like a bunch of hooligans in the football or soccer, for you now people who don't know soccer, but football match, you know, it's crazy out there.
Oh, it was. They bring a good crowd in a lot of places. In New Jersey, they get good crowds. They like to follow Maru's walk around in areas of Connecticut, like Mohegan Sun. They have a nice following in Chicago for Andrew Funfara, the local guy. A 19-year age disparity in this fight. Funfara was 24 years old. Johnson was 43. And I think one of the best ways to put it, I mean, that's the most telling statistic from this fight to me, because they each looked like they were a product of their age. Funfara was quick. He looked 24 years old, looked like a good prospect, whereas Glenn Johnson looked old, a little bit lethargic, and he was just easily outpointed. Johnson had a very good second round, actually caught from far with a few pretty good shots, but the momentum was just swung right back in his favor. In the third round, he wobbled Johnson with a big right hand. And in the seventh, Johnson had his mouth open, breathing heavily, and was just completely out of the fight from that point on. No puncher's chance, nothing like that. Just covered up and Funfara blasted away and easily outpointed him for the final few rounds of the fight. Once again, the score is 97-93, 97-93, 99-91, all in favor of Funfara.
Yeah, I had a little bit closer, but it was a good fight. And Funfara did his work. I thought he outworked him. And you're right, there were times where Glenn Johnson kind of looked out of it. But there were times when he landed some shots where I was like, oh, man, is Glenn Johnson going to shock everyone? You know,
wouldn't be the first time.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I kind of wanted to see Funfara stop Glenn Johnson because we know how difficult that is. But I knew I was asking for too much on that. But it would have been interesting to see if Funfara could do it. Now, I'm curious to see where Funfara goes from here now.
Very interesting, and I think it's going to be neat to see just how people view this win, whether they'll do sort of the revisionist history, like, oh, Johnson was old, he was nothing, not a quality opponent, or whether they're going to be like I was, and a lot of people favored Glenn Johnson to win in this fight. I thought that it was a toss-up fight. I thought Johnson was actually going to TKO Funfara. Funfara didn't have a particularly strong resume leading up to this point. And so I thought, you know, some Johnson's pulled it off so many times, sort of like a Bernard Hopkins, where it's tough to bet against him no matter what age, because we've seen him just pull off so many things so many times. After the fight, he said to Joe Tessitore, quote, if I can't beat someone like this who hasn't fought anyone of my caliber of competition, then there is no reason to keep doing it anymore. But I don't see myself losing this type of fight. Or actually, excuse me, I'm reading the wrong quote. That was before the fight, and after the fight, he actually sung that same tune. That's exactly why I messed up the quotes. He said, I believe I went out there and gave 100%. 100% wasn't good enough. If I can't beat someone like this, why should I go on? He hasn't fought anybody of my caliber of competition. It was one of those nights where I feel like I'm off. Sometimes you go out there as an athlete and perform, and you're trying hard, but there's some things that aren't there. To the boxing fans, thank you so much for all you have given me, all the support throughout the years and ups and downs. I gave 100% of what I got. I hope it was good enough for you to enjoy. It absolutely was. Now, maybe I'm stretching a bit here, or maybe I'm not, but I think it makes for a good talking point. Do you think that the Road Warrior is worthy of Hall of Fame consideration?
Ever since we kind of talked about what we were going to talk about on the show, I've been thinking about it. As much as I would like to see it because of what he's been through and, you know, the challenges and wasn't afraid of nobody, I don't think he gets in. At least not first ballot type, you know, maybe later on, but I don't think right away. I appreciate what he did, but I think most people appreciate his career, but he still didn't capture the level of accomplishments that you would think a Hall of Famer would have to capture, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Over half of his losses were in title fights, and I think that's what makes it so tough, because you want to reward him for fighting such tough competition and also for performing well against competition, too. With the 2004 fight of the year, he's had some great wins. Wins like Clinton Woods, Roy Jones Jr., Antonio Tarver. He has victories over, I mean, the list just goes on and on. Everything from guys like, you know, Alan Green and Yusuf Mack, who are sort of Showtime and ESPN level guys, to the guys like I just mentioned, and early in his career losing to Svenotti, Sid Vanderpoel, he's had losses too. He's had so many losses in title fights, lost to Bernard Hopkins all the way back in 1997. This guy has fought just about everybody. He would fight anywhere. And even though I'm not necessarily sure if he belongs in the Hall of Fame, I just hope that he gets consideration, because he's done so much he's not a part of this generation where, you know, they whine for every whine for everything. They get sick if they don't get their way. This guy has done everything that anybody has ever asked him to do in this sport, and it just warrants some sort of a thank you and some sort of recognition. And outside of the Hall of Fame, I just don't see any way that he could get that recognition for a long-standing period of time.
Definitely. And that's my thing. I don't think he will get recognized as a Hall of Famer, like I said, right away. But, like, you know, the one great thing is, as boxing fans out there, everyone, you know, I would say most boxing fans appreciate him and understand what he's done, though. That's a good thing. It's not like he's underappreciated. Well, I don't feel he's underappreciated by it.
Well, I feel like he's underappreciated, though. And I don't really have a long talking point to say about that, but I do think he's underappreciated. Hardcore boxing fans, yes, he's totally appreciated. But people who are casual fans of the sport either don't know him, or even if they do know him, they're not drawn to people like him who sort of quietly go about their business and do it in this fashion. He was never flamboyant. And in this day and age, that seems to be something that works wonders for popularity and something that tends to be important. With that, though, we're going to put this fight on hold, and we're going to take a caller off hold, our first caller of the night. We're going to welcome in Frank from California, wants to talk Amir Khan versus Danny Garcia. Remember, you can call in to the Boxing Fix at any time. Area code 347-215-7598. If you want to call in, Frank, thanks for coming on the show. How are you doing tonight? You there, Frank? Okay, well, we're going to put Frank on mute for a minute, see if he can come back. The call may have just dropped. We'll take Frank back. Remember, we can also take any air calls. Once again, the number is 347-215-7598. It's definitely been a week, Friday night fight season, but I thought that this was a solid Friday night fight card, one that I didn't even think was going to be any good. The other fight on that card, the one that seemed to turn a lot of heads, Jose Luis Castillo, improving to 64-11-1 with 55 knockouts after defeating Ivan Popovka, who looked absolutely flat. Everything that Jose Luis Castillo has been in his last few fights, that's what Popovka was in this fight. He was just slaughtered. It was a hard-fought victory for Castillo, absolutely, but it was also a bit of an easy night for him to hurt Popovka in the opening round, dropped him with a left hook to the chin, just under 45 seconds into round number two. Popovka switched to southpaw, and I mean, that did absolutely nothing. He still wasn't very effective, and at the end of round five, he was swelling, he was bleeding, and Castillo eventually stopped him at the end of the eighth round. The referee, Pete Podgorski, went to Ivan Popovka's corner and said that he was stopping the fight. Popovka was disappointed, but he hadn't been putting up anything, and the cuts were just bleeding. He was just beaten to bloody pulp by Castillo, and he picked up a victory, something we haven't been able to say all that often recently about Jose Luis Castillo.
Yeah, man, ESPN did a hell of a job with coming up with a name for the whole Friday Night Fight. I think they kept on promoting it as Turn Back in Time fight or whatever. That perfectly fitted this fight card perfectly. But, you know, I find even funnier with Castillo is even his punches look so slow, but yet he was still landing them. And he just battered and bruised this and blood.
Oh, they were so telegraphed, yeah.
Yeah, that's what was so incredible that, I mean, I was watching, I was like, man, I could duck out and get out of the way of those. Like, man, it was a trip seeing that. It's good to see Castillo put up a good fight, win a fight, and look good. I just hope he still hangs him up soon, man, because I know this is not – well, I know he can't do it again, at least with a tougher opponent. And we all know that he'll fight a tough opponent if the money's right, you know, and if he can make weight. But I just don't want to see him get hurt there. I can tell him – it looks like he's going to get hurt just swinging a punch.
Yeah, he does. Castillo has been very off as of late. Should have retired quite a long time ago. At least if you ask me. Lost to Alfonso Gomez back in 2010, the undercard of the Pacquiao-Clotty fight. at Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, Texas. And at that point, Castilla looked flat, and it's just gotten worse and worse since then. The loss to Jorge Paez Jr., that's actually not an awful loss, unanimous decision, but still, Castillo didn't look very good in that fight. He's been fighting poor fighters. Listen to this. He's fought Roberto Valenzuela, who came into the fight with a record of 52-52-2. Daniel Yocopicio, 4-12-2 entering the fight, and then 26-21, Sammy Ventura. Popoca was such a step up, and for Popoca, who had a hard-fought loss against Ruslan Provodnikov in April of 2011, an eighth-round KO in which he was dropped in that eighth round before the referee, Pat Russell, stopped the fight. Popoca was a heavy favorite. Who would have thought that, especially fighting in his hometown of Chicago, Illinois, that he would come out, look that flat, and lose to Jose Luis Castillo? That was something that, of course, because it's not a high-caliber fight, will sort of fly under the radar in a sense. But to me, I thought that this was just as big an upset, if not more of an upset, just on a lower scale than Khan versus Garcia, with Danny Garcia picking up the victory. Because Jose Luis Castillo in the past 3 years has flat-out stunk.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I wouldn't put it quite up there, but I kind of see what you're saying by saying that not on a larger scale. But I was even, not only was it an upset, it was shocking. it was hard to believe. Like, I'm telling you, if I told anybody, you know, that, hey, man, Jose Luis Castillo beat Popoca, and not only did he beat him, he won by TKO and bloodied him up. I think people were looking at me like I was smoking crack or something, man. They would be like, what are you talking about? That didn't happen. Have you seen his last fight? It happened, you know. It was crazy. It was, talk about turning back the hands of time.
Oh, totally. And then in the main event, Andrew Fonfara wound those clocks right back up to where they belong, looked like his 24-year-old self, and picked up the victory. Nothing much to speak of on the undercard for Friday night fights. Elijah McCall picked up a win. He's 11-1-1 with 10 knockouts at this point, but not really too much to speak of. A solid card as far as ESPN Friday night fights have gone. Also on Friday night, from the Orion Function Center in Campsie, New South Wales, Australia, Billy Dibb back in action. He's now 35-1, 21 knockouts. He defeated Juan Antonio Rodriguez by unanimous decision, 97-94, 98-92, 99-92. Dibbs was cut above the left eye in round. Solid and pick up the win.
Right, you're breaking up there, but yeah, I saw Dibbs. Man, I like I said, I like to watch Dibbs fight, you know, and he picked up, like I said, a much needed win, get, you know, to just get into things, and he looked good. The cut didn't really seem to bother him much, and he just took control and did what he had to do, you know, and got the victory over Rodriguez.
Yeah, did exactly what he came there to do. It was the first bout, actually, for Dibb as the world champion. It was fought for the IBF featherweight title. Went the distance. Nothing spectacular from Dibb, although the inside fight game did cause problems for him. Juan Antonio Rodriguez was very good in close range. Dibb's wasn't. The fight was pretty. Billy Dibb looked all right and did pick up the victory, and certainly he'll move on to better things. It flew under the radar as far as it wasn't really available on TV, even though it was on network television, actually, in Australia. Billy Dibb's brother, Bilal Dibb, improved to 9-0, still only 4 knockouts. He defeated Wee Jung Kim by unanimous decision, 97-94, 99-92, 98-93, in a fight that was almost identical to his brother's.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing I wanted to say was with Billy, like you said, he was having trouble at times with the inside, but he was able to use some nice feet work, I know, during the fight, you know, to get out of certain things and create problems for Rodriguez. But, for Bilal, yeah, that was a good fight, too. But he's kind of reminds me of Billy, you know. He's just, he's coming up, you know, you don't know too much about him yet. Only 4 KOs, too, you know, so... It was a pretty good fight. It was a good fight for him, too, against the, Korean or something like that?
Yes, Korean. Wee Jung
Kim. Against the Korean guy. So it wasn't bad.
Yep. Also, as I mentioned in the boxing blitz, good bounce back win for Mikhail Zorro in France. picked up the victory in round number one, knocked Magomed Abdurakhmanov straight out. That was for the vacant WBO European light middleweight title. Soros' fight against Zarbayev Lysankarov, to me, is still absolutely a fight of the year candidate. You can put that in there with some of the other fights I've seen. Just out of curiosity, I know we haven't quite gotten to the fight yet, but as we start talking right now, since I brought up Zoro and Bysankarov, how do you think that ranks to the fight like Amir Khan and Danny Garcia? Because I think that there's a faction of people that could consider that a fight of the year candidate, too.
As far, you're comparing the Zoro fight earlier this year to...
Well, not just
like
that
the fight,
but
of the
to
year.
Any fight. How do you think that ranks as fight of the year thus far?
I mean, it ranks up there. I definitely think there are some other ones. I really am still, I'm still liking the Ortiz-Lopez fight. I think that's a possibility for fight of the year still. Even this fight, like I think Khan and Garcia could very well get fight of the year. That was a hell of a fight, man. For the rounds that it lasted, man, it was an entertaining and hell of a match.
I need a cue for when we're back on the air.
We're back, guys.
Apologies for the technical difficulties on this end. So let's try this one more time. Amir Khan and Danny Garcia, great fight from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you didn't catch the fight on HBO, you had to see it. That's in the fight of the year discussion as well. Khan, a heavy favorite over Garcia, and Khan came out looking very good, very accurate, very fast. He's one of the fastest starters in all of boxing. And Danny Garcia wasn't very effective, only landed six punches in round number one, but the 5-1 underdog, that's the most popular one that I've seen so far. The 5-1 underdog came out strong in round number three, started to look good, and then a massive looping counter left hook in the final 30 seconds of the round knocked Amir Khan's head back on a swivel, dropped into the canvas, a huge knockdown punch, similar to the Yadel Johnson, Willie Nelson knockdown, in the sense that it's one of the better knockdowns, not knockouts, you'll ever see. I don't know how Amir Khan actually got back up to his feet after being dropped like that. Held on a little bit at the end of the round in those final seconds and was quite literally saved by the bell. And then in round number four, it was just a game of cat and mouse. Garcia chased Khan around the wing, belting him with huge power shots, dropped him two more times in that fourth round. And then at the end of the round, Kenny Bayless called a halt to the contest in what is now up there with Jose Cito Lopez defeating Victor Ortiz as an upset of the year candidate, too. What a great past 4 weeks we've had for boxing with these great upsets, great knockouts, and just continuing the trend. Danny Garcia looked absolutely phenomenal.
That was an incredible fight. I'll tell you this. Right when, not only was I predicted Khan to win, but during the beginning of the fight, when, you know, they're getting into the ring, I was watching it with a few of my buddies, and I'm like, hey, man, Garcia looks tight enough. He doesn't look warmed up. He looked dry. And he kind of started off that way, those first two rounds. But I think those first two rounds, he felt everything Khan had. And he's like, damn, this dude ain't got nothing. And he just gave it to Khan, man. And after that, I mean, that first knockdown, I can't believe Khan. First of all, that he was out on his feet. If any, I wouldn't have been upset if Bayless stopped it there, because if you look, he kept on walking backwards looking for the ropes, and he couldn't even find the ropes. He was gone. He was done there. But there was no way he could recover within that 30-second span, and he just got, man, I'm telling you, Garcia made me a believer. That's all I got to say. And, yeah, that is definitely upset of the year up there with Jose Super Lopez. I don't even know which one is more of an upset right now. I mean, can we give them a draw? Can we give them a tie?
Well, I can tell you who Ring Magazine is going to go with. All you got to do is look for who's promoted by who to figure out the answer to that question. Although, actually, they were both Golden Boy promotional cards, so it is what it is. Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if they give my code thing. Ring Magazine quickly falling downhill, but enough bashing of Ring. And how about some more praise for Danny Garcia? Because he looked a bit well-rounded, too. He showed that he had power. Yes, Amir Khan, it's been proven that he doesn't have a strong chin. But he doesn't have a chin made of glass, either. You look at the guys that he's lost to. Lost to Lamont Peterson, but it wasn't like he was knocked out by Peterson. It was a split decision loss. It was a close fight. Brady's press got knocked him out 54 seconds into the fight. Shocking, yes. But to say with only two knockout losses in his career, and losing the way he did, and refusing to clinch and just stay down for the count, he showed so much heart. I don't think it's fair to say that he's just a glass chin fighter and has one of the weakest chins in the division. Yes, it's hardly a chin of granite, but I think Amir Khan deserves a little bit more respect too, because a star was born last night in Danny Garcia. It's not as though Khan lost to some pushover.
Right, and that's right. Like I said, man, I'm still shocked about it. Like, I'm eating my words. It's okay though. I mean, I'm glad to be wrong to see a star born. Like, and I shouldn't even say that. We shouldn't even say a star was born, because technically he was born when he beat Morales. That's when he became champion and everything. But he's
true, but it's
the world.
To beat him in that style, that's one thing. But to blow through a heavy favorite like Amir Khan, that's a totally different animal.
Exactly. That was a great card. Like we said earlier, too bad a lot of the seats were empty out there in at the Mandalay Bay.
The attendance was absolutely poor. We'll get to that a little bit later. 347-215-7598. We'll patch you on and talk anything boxing. Of course, we're going to have Ray Beltran coming on the show in just a few minutes to talk about his upcoming class with Hank Lundy, and then we'll talk to Hank Lundy in approximately a half hour from now. That fight will be coming up on July 27th on ESPN from the Resorts Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Should be a very exciting fight card. Hank Lundy, always somebody who comes to fights. Ray Beltran, 30-year-old cagey veteran, very, very solid fighter. Should be a good test for the number one contender in Hank Lundy. Also on the Amir Khan, Danny Garcia card, in the super middleweight division, unanimous decision win for Fernando Guerrero, 24-1 with 18 knockouts. His record stands now after defeating Jose Medina, who drops to 17-11-1. Medina just a bit of a cream puff opponent, 100-89, 99-90. Hardly a top caliber guy for Fernando Guerrero. Guerrero dropped Medina with a left hook in the second round, coming towards the end of that round, but he got up quite quickly. It wasn't even necessarily being saved by the bell. It didn't seem like he was all that hurt. Between rounds, Medina said that he wasn't hurt as well, which just confirmed it. And then it was just a lot of volume punching from Guerrero. Medina served, and yeah, you saw the fight as well. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that Guerrero really used Medina just as a glorified sparring partner.
I think that's what this match was for. And the reason why is Guerrero's coming off of an injury. He had torn his bicep, and that postponed one of his last fight. So I think this was made for him to try to, you know, get some rounds in, see some live action, you know, test that arm, test that bicep out. And just get in some good work, you know. I think an early knockdown or an early knockout wouldn't be all that great for him, as far as getting some ring, some rounds in for him. So yeah, I would say it was a glorified, you know, sparring partner that he used Medina for. But I mean, I think that's what it was supposed to be for him anyway.
That is exactly what it was when they made that match. But both guys opened up late in the 10th round. It actually turned into a slugfest in that round, but Medina just couldn't hurt Guerrero, and Guerrero came right back and landed plenty of power shots of his own. Nothing that's going to blow anybody away, but still a solid win for Fernando Guerrero to keep on plugging and keep on going in that division. Also on that card, we talked to Jamie Cavanaugh last week here on the Boxing Fix on Leaving the Ring Radio and Blog Talk Radio. Jamie Cavanaugh picked up the victory. He's now 11-0-1 with 5 knockouts. He defeated Paul Verlarde, who drops to 3-2-3, a unanimous decision, 80-72 across the board. Tim Chatham, Richard Hook, and Adelaide Bird all scored about the same. Only way you could do it, no way you could have given a round to Paul Verlarde. He was out of it, but Kavanaugh didn't necessarily have the power to hurt him. But he still looked good, and another good fight moving his way up, the Irish immigrant moving into the United States. The Irish prospect grew up in Dublin, Ireland, moved over here. It's a great interview. You can remember, you can always catch any of our shows here on the Boxing Fix in the Blog Talk Radio archive. Jamie gave a great interview last week, and he put on a great performance at the Mandalay Bay yesterday night.
Yeah, great to see him come up with a win after, you know, the interview we had with him. He seems like a kid with a bright future, you know, a hard worker, and, you know, he basically, you know, he moved out here, he gave up a lot of stuff and sacrificed, you know, a lot of things out there in Ireland and I think it was also Spain. He would then come out here and, you know, he's doing his thing, and I think it was a great decision and a great move because it's paying off for him right now, and he put on a hell of a performance.
He did, absolutely. Phil LoGreco, here's a name you don't hear much about. 24-0 with 13 knockouts, picked up a knockout in the very first round, just 86 seconds in, stopped Brandon Hoskins. It was not, like I mentioned, Phil LoGreco is just not a name that gets a lot of recognition. He landed a ton of power shots, big hooks, looked really, really good. But why haven't we heard much about this name?
Well, I think a lot has to do because of promotion companies. I think now he is with Golden Boy, if I'm not mistaken. And he's starting to get some fights in. This is the second fight that his name was actually out there as part of an undercard. You know, he's a big guy on Twitter now. He's one of the guys with Paulie Malignaggi. They're good friends. The Italian Sensation Nation or whatever.
They call him the Italian Sensation.
Yeah.
And Paulie Malignaggi has that same following.
Right, yeah, and they're good friends. You know, they've done this reality TV show. I've talked to Phil a few times when they've been out here in L.A. You know, so they're trying to get his name out there, you know, and I think it's working. I think they're doing a good job. They're trying to get more exposure out in the U.S., I think, now. And they got him a lot of fights with Golden Boy. Golden Boy, I don't know what kind of deal they inked or anything, but I know he's with them now, if I'm not mistaken. So it's good for him. I think we'll start hearing more from him now. And yeah. I think that's good for Golden Boy. They need an Italian guy to pump up. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah, you mentioned that it's the second undercard. That's a big fight that he's been a part of. Back in April, he was on the undercard at Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on the undercard of Chad Dawson and Bernard Hopkins and Seth Mitchell, Chaz Witherspoon.
Right.
Picked up a victory over Hector Orozco. Unanimously through 6 rounds. So now at 24-0 and 13 knockouts and 28 years of age, the Canadian-Italian sensation, yeah, looking to keep picking up victories and make a name for himself in this division. At this time, we're going to bring in our first guest of the evening, Ray Beltran, about ready to take on Hammer and Hank Lundy in 2 weeks' time on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights. Ray, thanks a lot for coming on the show tonight.
Hi, how you doing, man?
Very good. Thanks a lot. Heading into your fight against Hank Lundy on July 27th, on paper, Lundy's the favorite. He has a cleaner record, and he's had more exposure to American audiences than you have. However, you have plenty more fights, and you've been fighting for a lot longer, 30 years of age. Do you think that experience is going to play a key role in the fight?
Well, I think it's not about experience, it's about talent, I think. Experience also. I've been training with the best and always fighting anybody. So I think I'm ready for that fight.
Nice. Now, Ray, you know, Lundy's been, you know, doing a lot of trash talking, and he calls out, like, he's calling out Adrian Broner all the time it almost seems like he's looking past you. Do you feel that he's looking past you for this fight?
Well, you know, to me, those things, I don't even pay attention to it, you know. I think I'm ready to give this to a lot of people. Might be a surprise, not to me. But, I mean, it might be taking a life. It can be a mistake for him, you know what I mean? He should take step by step.
Right.
But, he's the kind of guy he is, so, you know, whatever.
Absolutely. Now, Lundy has established himself as a master of the pre-fight hype and the trash talking and all that stuff. How much of what he says do you actually pay attention to? Do you let it just go in one ear and out the other? Or do you listen and, if for no other reason, just listen just to get that extra motivation for beating him come July 27th?
Well, you know what? It's another typical big mouth guy, you know? Like, it's not the first one. And to me, I'm, you know how Mexicans do. We talk in the ring, you know? And he can talk and say whatever he wants anyways, but what really counts is about what we do in the ring. And I don't have time to let those little things bother me, you know what I mean? I gotta be concentrated and focused and on the fight and that's it. You know, it might be good for him, you know, to put more attractive to the fight, you know what I mean, for the fans. But, you know, to me, it doesn't matter. It's whatever. I've been a long time in this business, and it's one more guy, you know, one more guy with a big mouth.
Right now. Ray, you've been, like, the main sparring partner, basically, for Manny Pacquiao for well over, like, 5 years, I think, more, maybe even more than that. Do you feel that training with Freddie Roach and sparring with Manny has made you a more complete and better fighter?
Definitely, you know. Definitely, I mean, it makes me put me another level, I think. I mean, you don't really hurt, you know. Sparring with the best, you don't get nothing out of that, but you get hurt and get messed up, or you get better. So I think I've been getting better.
You hail from Los Mochis, Mexico, and you currently reside in Arizona, but the fight next Friday night is in Atlantic City. Does fighting so far away from home carry any sort of disadvantage?
Well, you know what? My whole career, since I was in the amateurs, I've been the underdog, you know what I mean? I've been on... everybody's backyard, you know, and I know it's disadvantage in the way of you know, the politics. I know that if the fight goes decision, I mean, it won't go on my side, no matter what happens, you know. And they won't let that run go just that easy. I think I have to knock him out to be able to win the fight. So, you know, that's what happened.
Now, within the past year, you fought the undefeated Sharif Bogari, the undefeated Luis Ramos Jr. Hank Lundy isn't undefeated, but given that he's the number one contender in the world and he's the current NABF lightweight title holder, do you think that he's the best fighter you've faced so far?
You know what? Yeah, I believe so. I also believe he's a real better, more solid fighter than those guys, you know what I mean? He really is a true fighter, you know? He fight better guys, and he can get knocked down, and he come back and win. You know what I mean? I think the most important fight of my career and the hardest fight of my career.
Yep. Now, on paper, a lot of people think that Hank Lundy is a relatively heavy favorite in this fight, having fought guys like David Diaz and Danny Williams, who came into the fight. A lot of people were picking him, as a matter of fact. Why do you think that you're going to be different than any of these other opponents that Hank Lundy has faced? What gives you the advantage, and why do you believe that you can beat him?
Well, I believe I can beat him, and I believe in my talent, you know what I mean? I can adjust to any kind of fighters, too. So I think it might be all those guys, but, you know, I'm Ray Beltran, you know, and every style of my fight, and I'm going to be fighting his game. I'm going to try to do my own game, you know what I mean, make adjustments for my last experience and my last fight. And I think I got power punch too. I got technique. I'm not just a easy opponent, and I can fight any situation. I can box. I can fight inside. You know, I can do many things. I got speed. I got power. So, you know, and that's why I believe I can win this fight.
Yeah. Do you think that a lot is going to be because of your power? Because we've seen lately with Lundy's kind of I don't want to say he has a weak chin, but we've seen that he does go down. He's been down a few times. Do you think that's going to be the big factor for you is your power?
I think one of my advantage, you know, I think that's it shows that some kind of weakness, you know. You don't have that's what we think also, you know. We really have a really good chin. So I think a puncher can win at any round, you know. It don't matter. It can win from the first to the last round. So I think, and literally, I think I have enough power. I might not be a big puncher, but I got enough punch to hurt anybody. And
right.
And another thing, he really have a hard chin. He can you show it different times. So I think one of
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what that. But mainly, I'm gonna be concentrating on technique and be a smart in the fight, and I know once I line one of my shots, you gotta make some damage. You know what I mean? So still, I know it's a best league guy, very very talented, and it's not gonna be easy. So, you know.
Definitely. Now, you know, you're from we were saying earlier. You know, you're from Los Mochis, Mexico. You know, many great Mexican fighters, you know, come from there. What is it about Los Mochis that just produces such great warriors in the ring?
Well, you know, we always have a, I don't know, I think it's a good town for good fighters. You know, always good, talented fighters come from there. And, I don't know, just it's a good area, you know.
Right. Well, how did you end up coming to, you know, to Wild Card and becoming like the sparring partner for Pacquiao? How did that end up starting?
Well, I came here in 2002 and then kept training there, and then Manny tried to, when he fought Marquez the first time, they used me to spar with him. And then I was, anyways, before I was coming back and forth to Arizona for training camp. And then the last thing, I just decided to stay there, you know, and it's making my home. And it's the best there, you know, always good sparring, always tough sparring. And always a good work over there. You know, then I become part of the team.
Now, how does training with somebody like Manny prepare you for a fight like coming up against Hank Lundy? Or does it not really help in any one distinct way when it comes to you preparing for a fight?
Well, you know, when I fought with Manny, I can feel like difference right away. It put me another level because Manny pushed me to the limit. You know, like with Manny, you can't even relax in not even a second. Even if you're not throwing punches, you're always working. So you can feel the difference once you spar with somebody else. Even your timing gets better. You get better in everything. You know, you feel very strong, it puts you another level, man. So I wish I could fight with Manny even for every fight, you know. But hey, he's not there, you know. He's got to take advantage every time that he got a training camp as well, and sneak in, you know. But I think to me it's also a great experience, you know, unique experience. And what can I say, you know? It's nothing but the best.
All right, be sure. Fans, you're going to want to catch that Friday, July 27th at the Resorts Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, promoted by Jimmy Birchfield's Classic Entertainment and Sports. Ray, good luck against Hank Lundy. Thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Thank you, man, and thank you. And, see you guys over there at 27th, and God bless, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Raymundo Beltran fighting against Hank Lundy in 2 weeks' time. That should be a pretty entertaining fight, especially if you believe all the hype that Hank Lundy is saying. To me, I always enjoy watching Lundy fight. He always comes to fight. He tends to be pretty entertaining, and I think that this fight is going to be one of the better fights of the season so far, and a season of Friday night fights that's really been lacking.
You know, I'm pretty excited about this fight. I'm not going to say who I'm going for just yet. I don't, but, you know, a lot of people who do know me and certain fighters that I like or dislike or whatever, I think people know who I'm going for in this fight. But it should be a good one. It should be a very entertaining fight.
Oh, without a doubt. Styles do make fights exactly like Ray said, and That'll certainly make it very entertaining. Now, back to the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Before we pull on Hank Lundy in just about approximately 15 minutes time, Ryan Bivens coming on the show later. Junior middleweight Daquan Arnett improved to 5-0 with 3 KOs. He stopped Eddie Cordova at 1 minute and 39 seconds of the second round. Cordova was dropped in the first, and Arnett finished him off in the second round. One that's really turned me on is Jay Leon Love. This prospect is for real. I love watching this kid fight. It's in the middleweight division. He improved to 12-0, 7 knockouts. Didn't pull out the knockout against Joseph De Los Santos, but he did slide to an easy unanimous decision and perfect execution of his boxing skills. He's so well-rounded. He has very good power, as he showed multiple times before, but he also has good clean boxing skills. He's somebody who's very, very, very fun to watch. Really enjoyable.
Yeah, like I said, I like Jay Leon Love. When I was out at the Mayweather-Cotto fight, I ran into him. And he's also a great, he's a nice guy. He chopped it up, talked some boxing out there with, it was me and a good friend of mine over Scott Hale over at Hailstorm Sports. And we were just talking and boxing with him, man. And he's a real cool guy. Knows what he's talking about. He's smart. And he's very talented. And he's a hard worker. And like I said earlier, training out of the Mayweather boxing gym or boxing club, whatever you want to call it. You know, he's the future, you know. I like that. That's some talent. The future of boxing looks good with a lot of these prospects coming in.
Oh, it definitely does. So many great fighters on this card. Just to rattle off the names one more time, obviously you had Amir Khan and Danny Garcia in the main event, but Fernando Guerrero and Jose Medina fighting each other. Jamie Kavanaugh, the top prospect, fighting Paul Verlarde. Phil Logreco defeated Brendan Hoskins. Abner Cotto defeated Juan Montiel, a TKO in round 8. Abner Cotto improving to 14-0 with 6 knockouts. He's another good name. Daquan Arnett, Jay Leon Love. All of these guys, it just goes to show when you look at these cards how deep Golden Boy and Top Rank are in terms of their stable of fighters. These guys can put on great shows night after night, and it's a real shame that this stuff isn't available for hardcore fight fans who want to watch this stuff.
Yeah, and that's and another guy, too, that you just mentioned, Abner Cotto, you know, he's another guy. There's just, this is why I like undercards, man, is when they got all these good prospects with decent fights, you always want to see another big name on there or like a co-feature. But, you know, I like seeing a lot of these, the future of boxing, you know. That's a nice card that when they do that, you know, see future stars.
Who are some of the better prospects that we should be looking out for?
I definitely would say Jay Leon Love. We got another guy we just had on last week, Benavidez. You know, I would put him up there still as a prospect. There's, Joel Diaz. There's a lot of guys out there, and I like it. And Gary Russell, how about that? That's another one too, man. There's a lot of them, and that's why I like the fact that there's so many people out there that have potential. Who's the guy, the heavyweight out of on the East Coast? I'm blanking.
It depends. There's multiple different heavyweights. It depends, what you consider a prospect. There's guys like Maurice Wak, who I wouldn't necessarily consider a prospect, but he's somebody who's absolutely coming up through the ranks.
Oh, I think the guy from Jersey is who I'm thinking of. The one that's been fighting on the NBC cards.
Oh, okay, from the NBC cards, Bryant Jennings.
Yeah, Bryant Jennings.
Bryant Jennings, absolutely. He's looked very good. One thing I've always wondered, though, is, at what point is somebody not considered a prospect anymore? Once you get a lot of exposure, with titles meaning so little, is it more of a question of exposure and caliber of opponent, or is it just strictly once a guy gets a title, he's no longer a prospect?
I think that you're a prospect for until you become more of a challenger, until you get these, big-time fights, these title shots. I would still say Jennings. I think Jennings has, 14 fights around there. I don't know offhand, but, that's still prospect levels. Jay Leon Love's trying to get his name out there. They're still prospects, I think Benavidez is soon to be maybe a top contender, challenger soon, but I think he would still be considered a prospect. But regardless, those are, I mean, the future is great.
Without a doubt. Back to the top of the bill, though, for one more moment before we move on to the United Kingdom. Where do you see Amir Khan and Danny Garcia going next? Because Amir Khan has been, in the eyes of many, exposed as a fighter with a weak chin and no longer at the top of the division. And Danny Garcia really just had his coming out party, even more so than he did against Eric Morales. Where do you see him both going? And how about this? We'll throw this one in there, too. Is Danny Garcia better than we thought? Or is Amir Khan perhaps not all we made him out to be?
Well, first of all, and I'm not trying to change the subject or anything. I just want to get this right because I don't want our callers, a bunch of callers in a bit or later, Ryan Bivens, to get mad at me. Jennings is a Philly fighter. I said Jersey, my mistake. I got to correct myself on that. I know the Philly people out there might try to kill me out here in the West Coast.
Well, he's been fighting in New Jersey. We knew what you meant.
Yeah. But I think it's a little bit – I don't think Khan, as far as Khan goes – I've never been so sold on him, man. There was always something lacking, you know. I felt like he didn't have that desire, that killer instinct, that winning desire. That I thought that's what he lacked. With Garcia's definitely something, you know. He's the real deal. I'm gonna keep saying this, and everyone out there. I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record, but he's making me eat my words. Like, the guy made me look stupid. You know, and he showed me that he's the real deal, and I am excited for him in his future, you know. And he's also another Philly fighter, you know, and big shout out to him having a TV Johnny, the little guy with the grills in his mouth. He makes those grills for him and all these rappers, like, from what I heard. So that was pretty interesting. But he's entertaining. And he's got, you know what's good about Garcia? His father. That's what's going to get him more exposure and more people talking about him.
Which is funny because it's something that he shies away from. He says, you know, I'm a solid guy. I'm not necessarily everything that my father is. I'm not the loudmouth. I'm not the one shouting out all this stuff. He's totally different from his father. But you're right, his father more or less, I don't know if it's fair to say that it gives him more exposure, but to people who follow the sport of boxing and listen to his father's always got something in say, and I suppose when he's saying something, it's at least a way to get Danny Garcia's name out there. But now with the victory like this, Garcia is one of the top guys. But for Amir Khan, who do you think Amir Khan fights next?
I tweeted this last night. I think a great fight would be Amir Khan and Victor Ortiz. Definitely would be a great fight. Two guys coming off of a loss, knockouts.
But is that realistic? With both of those guys being moneymakers in the eyes of the promoter, and both coming off tough losses. Is that really a fight that's realistic to expect at least right away?
I think it's realistic. I don't see how much of a draw. I mean, I'm not saying Ortiz lost his draw fully, but I mean, I think there's times you gotta. I think that'd be a great fight just for two guys coming off a loss. That I don't think they'll ever be able to get to that highest level as far as at the 147 one.
Yeah, and one thing I personally think Amir Khan should do, I don't understand why he doesn't go back to the United Kingdom. I understand that he's fighting out of wild card, and that's good. He's argument that that's where he should be. It's a great place for him. Training Freddie Roach is a phenomenal opportunity for fighters. But if you just took a look around the Mandalay Bay, even on television, there were not many people in that venue to watch Amir Khan fight. So why not make a little bit more money in the UK against at least a couple of guys like, let's see, who are some names that Amir Khan could fight? Mauricio Herrera perhaps would be a good fight. He's actually looking at Kareem Mayfield as a possible fight. But anybody in the United Kingdom, because they will go out to support Amir Khan there, so even if you put him against somebody in a domestic fight like a Paul McCloskey, even though he's lost two of his last three, I think that could at least be something that's going to draw people's attention in the United Kingdom. Get him a good, solid fight on his belt before you move back into the junior welterweight division and start looking at the top five and the top ten again. Guys like Marcos Maidana, Mike Alvarado, Zab Judah, and then the upper echelon, guys like Lamont Peterson. I don't think anyone necessarily wants to see Danny Garcia again. But you know something? In a rematch of that fight a year or two down the road, I'm not sure Garcia would blow through him like that because Garcia's not really a big power puncher.
No, I don't know. It looked like he was. He was last night.
Well, there's a difference between somebody like Mike Tyson blowing through a guy and somebody like Danny Garcia. I think there's still some question as to had Kenny Bayless not stopped the fight with like 30 seconds to go, which it should have been stopped before that. I actually thought that there were better times to stop it as opposed to right then. If Amir Khan could have actually gotten his feet underneath him, or had he not been rocked with that big shot, how would it have gone? Because he looked very solid in the first two rounds of that fight. So just something to think about, but a career changer for both of those men, for better in the case of Garcia and for worse in the case of Khan.
You know, I'm going to go out and say this, and this is by no means disrespecting Freddie Roach or anything, but I do think he's a good trainer. I think he's getting I don't think a lot of people are touching on this. I don't think he's a good trainer for Khan. I don't think Khan's the type of guy that can take these punches. And Freddie Roach obviously concentrates on that offense. And I mean, even Pacquiao, Pacquiao's okay to take some, to land some, you know. That's not, I don't think that's a good style for Khan, and I think that could be a big problem, too, is the training.
Very well could be. Certainly the chin's going to be an issue, too, because it has not held up well in two of his three losses. Danny Garcia, the conqueror, conquering Amir Khan at the Mandalay Bay. We're going to have Hank Lundy on the show in just a few minutes, but there was a very entertaining scrap in the United Kingdom in the heavyweight division on Epics. Derek Delboy Chisora losing to David Hay, falling to 15-4. David Hay improving. It's his first fight since he fought Vladimir Klitschko in what was an absolutely abysmal performance all the way back in July of 2011. But David Hay looked very good throughout. It was, in my opinion, the most impressive performance he's had since he's been in the heavyweight division. It was not a fight that I expected Hay to even win. So to fight the way he did, to put those combinations together, it's rather ironic because Hay's nickname is the Haymaker. And even though Hay was obviously landing hard punches, the one throwing the telegraphed slow-motion Haymakers was Derek Chisora, and it came back to cost him.
You know, I'm going to go out and say this. A lot of people, I think, took my comments on Twitter wrong. I said I wasn't impressed with the fight, or I didn't think it was that great of a fight. And what I meant by that is I thought it was so hype. And I was very, very excited for this fight. But I think it got so much hype, you know, with the beef that they had with each other and everything, that it didn't live to my expectations for it. I wanted to see a competitive fight. I didn't think it was competitive at all. I think David Hay just looked a lot better, quicker, you know, he was faster, better hands, you know, better feet work. And I wanted to see more of a grudge match, a hatred, you know, between them, you know, and I didn't see it. I just saw a one-sided fight. So that's what I meant by that. But other than that, it was a decent fight. It was just a little sloppy, I believe, by Chisora, which I kind of expected, but someone brought up a point. A lot of his that sloppiness probably was brought due to David Hay's quick feet work and being quicker.
I thought that Derek Chisora fought kind of a dumb fight. It's not now, of course, Derek Chisora, he's a certain mold of fighter. We knew what to expect from him. But he looked even more slow against David Hay. And instead of trying to put combinations together, it was just Derek Chisora kind of stumbling on in, throwing a big shot, missing by a foot, and then getting tagged with a bunch of punches by David Hay. He wasn't fighting a smart fight, and at no point during that contest was the final result ever in any doubt. It was just a question of could David Hay finish him off, and he absolutely did in round number five. Dropped Chisora, and that was a great knockout for David Hay, the 24th in 26 fights, which is another thing because I don't think of David Hay necessarily as being a huge power puncher for whatever reason. I suppose he is. He's got all of these knockouts, and they're against very solid opponents. But when you think of power punches in the heavyweight division, David Hay's name isn't necessarily one that comes up all that often.
Definitely, and there's it opened a lot of doors for him, or a lot of potential. It threw a nice little monkey wrench in the heavyweight division, in a good way. It created a lot of possibilities. I mean, like I said, we all know what he wants. He wants the Klitschko, But I mean, if you know, you like you said, you don't want to see it. Let's say they don't do that. There's how about a fight between him and like a Areola maybe? You know, that would be another good one. I think that'd be a good test for Areola.
See what I'm not sure if I necessarily want to see that fight, but I would certainly watch it. There's far worse fights out there that you could make. What I want to know though is where did this Derek Chisora go? Because Chisora is now 15-4. He's lost four of his last five fights, although one of them was against Robert Helenius, which was just a mockery of a result. Chisora did outfight him, and he was flat out robbed. I'm wondering if, with all these losses, you look at the people that he's lost to: David Haye, Vitaly Klitschko, Helenius, Tyson Fury. All big names in the heavyweight division, and a lot of those fights have been with Chisora going on the road. I wonder if he's going to be sort of like a, maybe not so much a Glenn Johnson, because obviously the way they go about their business is totally different, but I suppose a road warrior, so to speak, if he's just going to be one of those guys that fights on the road, and he's going to have 10, 15 losses at the end of his career, but off the best at the heavyweight division. Somebody who just can't break through the mold, so to speak. Am I right in saying that's the direction that Chisora seems to be heading?
Yeah, I definitely think he's going that way. I don't see much from him. I've never been truly impressed by him. I think he's fought great fights. He's been a tough challenge. He's one of those guys that he's going to give you a tough fight. He's a tough challenger, but he's not going to be champion. I mean, I have one of my buddies said it the best, man. As long as the Clippers are still fighting, though, who cares, right? They're going to win anyways.
Well, I always enjoy watching Vladimir and Vitaly fight. We touched on this a couple of weeks ago. I love Vladimir Klitschko in particular and his style of fighting. But with him at age 36 not really showing any signs of slowing down, to me, everyone says that the heavyweight division is awful, and I get that there's nobody that can challenge the Klitschkos. But when you look at names like Adamek, Alexander Povetkin, Tyson Fury, not so much Tony Thompson, who just lost to Vladimir Klitschko, but Seth Mitchell, Chris Areola, Eddie Chambers, Derek Chisora, David Price. Talk about a great matchup, David Price and Tyson Fury. There's a lot of entertaining fights that can be made in this division just outside of the Klitschkos.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of which, I wanted to bring this up, and I think this is also a perfect time to bring it up. I think your favorite heavyweight is actually just signed to fight in the States couple months, Wilder. Isn't that like your favorite heavyweight of all time?
Oh, God. Like I've said time and time again, I'm always very tough on Demetrius Andrade and his opponents. Deontay Wilder's opponents make Andrade just look like murderer's row, like the toughest schedule of opponents. He just never fights anyone of any quality. And you know something, it's not anything against Deontay Wilder, because Wilder has always carried himself very well, always very professional, very well-spoken. But he's fighting absolutely nobody. And at this rate, he's going to be ready for, you know, a Klitschko or somebody of that caliber by the year 2030, because he is just coming along so slow. Owen Beck is not a proper step up, but I digress. The former 2008 Olympian, 23-0 with 23 knockouts against guys that have just been pulled out of a bar and tossed in front of him, or so it seems. Some guys that don't even seem as though they should be sanctioned. I don't know, though. Who beats the Klitschko? Is there anybody in this group that could at least make for an entertaining fight? Because I got to tell you what, I know Chisora has lost four fights now and all against top competition, but I thought Chisora was one of the ones that came the closest to that, and he's got the style, the sort of in-your-face, coming forward and constantly throwing. I gave him four rounds against Vitaly Klitschko, and that is the style that's going to beat one of them. So Chisora's had his shot. Is there anybody who fights like him that you could conceivably see putting on a decent show with one of the Ukrainians?
I really think that Seth Mitchell maybe in a year or so could do it. At least give him a good fight. I like Seth Mitchell. What he lacks as far as, you know, experience in boxing, he makes it all up in determination and just the will to win. In the heart. So I really like Seth Mitchell. I think he could do it, I think.
All right, so at this time, we're going to move on from the United Kingdom and move on to Hammer and Hank Lundy, star of ESPN's Friday Night Fights in 2 weeks, fighting Ray Beltran. We had Ray on the show earlier. Hank, thanks a lot for coming on the show tonight. We really appreciate it.
Hey, how you doing? No problem, bro. Much love. Thanks for having me.
Now, you're currently ranked as number one contender in the division, but you're not really content to simply wait for the title shot. Why are you fighting Beltran on July 27th instead of just patiently waiting it out for an inevitable shot at the title?
Well, you know, first and foremost, it's always good to get back in the ring, you know, and sharpen up on your skills. And then at that, you know, DeMarco and Molina fight in September, why wait that long where I could just go in there and fight and work on some more things?
So when you say it like that, do you think that Beltran's one of the tougher opponents that you faced, or do you think that you fought tougher guys? Because it sounds as though you're looking a little bit ahead towards the future opportunities by taking a fight like Beltran as sort of an interim fight before you get the title shot.
Well, you know, my whole career I've been match tough, and I'm not looking over him. It's just I know where I'm supposed to be and what I'm destined, you know what I mean, to be. And, you know, me being world champ, that's where I'm supposed to be. But I'm not looking over, you know, Beltran. We're going to put on a good show, and I will walk away victorious.
Now, Hank, you know, you talked on, you're known for, you know, your trash talking before the fight, the hype, you know, and then with Molina, you know, the knockout. You were talking a lot of trash then, almost like if you're overlooking. Do you feel like you're overlooking Beltran at all? You feel it's a
problem? That's one thing about it. I'm not overlooking Beltran. You know, I'm putting in hard work. You know, it's going to be a good fight, and I'm looking forward to put on a good show for the fans. I'm not overlooking. We going in there. I know he's coming to win. You know, Freddie Roach is 0-2, and I know he want to, you know, change that while trying to get a win against me. But what I'm just saying, you know, my hard work and my determination, I'm not going to let it happen because I'm training hard. I'm looking at this as my championship fight.
Absolutely. Now, you always talk a big game at these press conferences, and for a lot of people, it's very entertaining to hear these exchanges. And with a record of 21-1-1, you tend to back it up. But I've always wondered with, you know, guys like this, do you believe a lot of the stuff that you say, or how much of it is just said with the intention of generating interest for fans? The trash talking, I mean.
Well, you know, with the trash talking, you know, it's an entertainment business, and you know, trash talking does, it gets the fans to want to come see the fight, get people to tune in. But you know, that's what I was doing it for. But you know, sometimes it is for to get into you know your opponent skin and get into their head. But you know, right now I'm just being simply playing over Hammer and Hank. And if you notice, even with the Danny Williams fight, you know, we were going back and forth, but it's just to build up the fight. And you got to understand, at the end of the day, this is our job, and this is what, you know, we have to do to promote the fight.
Now, if you beat Beltran, does that mean you think that puts you in that title shot? You're ready for it?
Most definitely. You know, I'm number one in the WBC. So the winner of this, DeMarco Antonio, I fight them most definitely. I'm the number one guy.
What's your take on that upcoming Antonio DeMarco, John Molina bout that's upcoming in September?
Well, I'm going to put it like this. It was kind of like I didn't respect the move because, you know, Molina has not been busy, and you pick a guy who has not been busy. But the flip side of that, I hope John Molina wins so I can kill two birds with one stone, win the world title, and get my revenge.
Okay. Now, here's another thing, man. I've heard there's been a little beef with you and Adrian Broner. Is that right? And what's up with that?
Yes, sir. You know, Adrian Broner, like, he seen somebody in Philly was talking. Like, first of all, you know, I run and duck for nobody. It was a fight in Philly. I had no opponent. You know, I told him, listen, you talk, let's make it happen. You know what I mean? Let's fight. You come up to 135, let's get it. I don't run and duck from nobody. I fight. I fight real fighters. Who has Adrian Broner fought? And the last guy he fought, what's the guy? I forget the guy's name, but that guy
Daniel
beat.
Daniel Fontaine and Leon.
Yeah,
no, Eli Perez
before that, yes.
I think it was, what's his name, De Leon or something like that?
Man,
well,
I think he fought
that,
Daniel Leon and
he fought the boat.
He fought Daniel Leon and then
He beat Broner. And I'm keeping it real, but these guys that he's fighting, they are nowhere compared to the guys I'm fighting.
Right. Now he would have to move. He would have to be moving up in weight. Is that a fight that you would want if he was to move up in weight, like right away?
Listen, if Adrian Broner move up to 135, see the question is his team going to let him fight Hammer and Hayes? I want to fight any given day. I'm always ready. If you want to fight me, we can get it. But the question is people going to take the fight? That's the big question.
How much would you be willing to concede in contract negotiations? Because you know that with a guy like Broner, he's going to want a lot of the money. He's probably going to want you to move down and to come to his weight as opposed to him coming to yours. How much are you willing to concede in order to get that fight?
Well, you know, I can't make no 130. That's not the question. And, you know, he was talking that he wanted to come up. He's moving up to 135 after this fight. So we should meet. I stay at 135 just for him. Well, you know, I'm going to try to go win the world title at 135, try to unify it, then move up to 140.
All right, now, you're a Philadelphia guy. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, if he don't want to fight, then I got to go do what I got to do, move up and go to 140 after I win these titles at 135.
Now, you're from Philadelphia, but you fight for Jimmy Birchfield's Classic Entertainment and Sports, which is based out of Rhode Island. What is it about CES that's brought you into their stable as opposed to just fighting for a promoter that's closer to your home in Pennsylvania?
Well, you know, at that time, we wanted to get out of Philadelphia, you know, and get underneath of another promoter. You know, there's a lot of things that go on. A lot of guys that sign with the same promoter in Philadelphia. We didn't want to take that route. We wanted to take a different route and go out. And that's exactly what we did. And, you know, I've been with Jimmy since I've been pro. And, you know, we had our ups and we had our downs. But Jimmy definitely knows that at the end of the day, I'm the real deal. Like, I'm not Superman. Yes, I may go down in a fight. But when I go down in a fight, I'm popping right back up and I'm fighting my ass off. Excuse my language.
That's okay. Absolutely.
Now, Hank, now, Michael, you know, a Philly guy, you know, you're a proud Philly guy. Where do you put yourself when it comes to top current fighters from Philly?
Well, you know, I'm one of the guys that they call me the Badger Honor of Philly. You know, I don't have a big promoter. I didn't have a big promoter. You know, I'm doing everything from the muscle. Everything I have, I got by fighting with my hands, you know. I'm the real deal. I'm the real McCoy. I'm taking the underground route, fighting all the tough guys, and I'm showing the world that I deserve to be world champ. Like the last guy I fought, Danny Williams, he was 21 wins, 16 big knockouts, was supposed to beat me. And I keep on proving and showing these guys that I belong to be world champ and I should be fighting for a world title. Any guy they put in front of me, I'm going to show you something different, and I'm going to go in there and take care of business and show y'all.
Now, is you said like after you captured the title at 35, you want to go up 140? Would 140 be a lot more comfortable for you?
Yeah, 140 is a lot comfortable for me. You know, 135. You know, I do what I have to do to make 135. You know, I'm in a house. I sleep, get my rest, eat properly. You know, I can make 130. It's no problem making 135. But I feel as though 140 is more better for me. I was actually rated number 8 in the world at 140. So I have no problem, you know, going to 140. I had a couple fights at 140 before I start mainly, you know, campaigning at 135.
Yep. Now, where can fans follow your career, via Twitter, Facebook, or anything like that? If they want to find out more information on your career, where can they do that?
You can hit me up on Twitter at hammerandhank.com. I'm Hammer and Hank 30 on Twitter. Facebook, you know, the same thing, Hammer and Hank 30. It's everything on, even on Instagram, Hammer and Hank 30.
Yeah, now, you had a career of 65-5, I believe, as an amateur. You were the 2003 Pennsylvania Golden Gloves champion, a silver medalist at the 2005 Golden Gloves tournament. How much of that amateur success translated to pro success for you?
Well, you know, it actually helped me, you know, with the making weight, being more professional, you know, with the making weight, you know, getting a clear sense of going into battle, what to expect, you know, it helped a lot. Because, you know, most of the times, you know, in an amateur fight, you never know who you're going to fight. You never know what style you're going to face. So I kind of use that in my pro status and just try to adjust to when I'm in the ring. Like my coaches, they watch tapes. I don't watch no tapes. They tell me what to look out for, and I go in the ring and I adjust to fighters. Because if you look for one thing, you come out with the fighter may do something else.
So you don't watch any video at all. You just how exactly do you train then for your specific opponents if you don't actually watch the video?
Well, what I do sometimes, I'm not gonna lie. I may look at them. Okay, this the guy I'm fighting, and I go from there. I let my coach break it down, and you know my coach may reassess and reassure me what they like to do, and you know I just go in the ring and I just adapt to the fighter. I really don't watch no tapes to tell you to be truthful. I don't watch no tapes because you may prepare for one thing and your opponent comes in doing something else.
All right. July 27th, ESPN2's Friday Night Fights from the Resorts Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Hammer and Hank Lundy going up against Raymundo Beltran. Hank, thanks a lot for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you. Much love. Thank y'all for having me.
Hank Lundy coming on the Boxing Fix. You, too, can come on the Boxing Fix if you call 347-215-7598. Call and talk anything that's happened in boxing recently, and we certainly had some great fights this weekend. And I think that Lundy, it's going to be another very fun fight, as we talked about a little bit earlier, in a season of Friday Night Fights that really hasn't had all that many that were all that outstanding. But with that, we'll get into our hard-hitting headlines. Kareem Mayfield and Mauricio Herrera talking about a potential fight on ESPN. That's one of the headlines, one of the fights that's looking to be made. That would be a very entertaining and very good fight for ESPN.
Definitely, that would be a great fight. I wanted to do one plug in real quick. I'm sorry. I was just informed because he forgot to say it with Ray Beltran. Everyone can follow him over on Facebook as Sugar Ray. It was a Sugar Ray Beltran. So that's a place on Facebook to find him at, and that was the first guest as well. So sorry about that.
Yep, so that'll be a very good fight on ESPN's Friday Night Fight. So if that comes through, who do you like in that fight?
I'm sorry, which one was that?
Kareem Mayfield and Mauricio Herrera.
Man, I think that's going to be a hell of a fight. I think it's a great fight for both of them. A good fight to see where Kareem Mayfield's at, if he is who, you know, what the hype's about now. Because obviously, I was wrong on his last fight against Serrano. And then to see where Herrera could do. I like Herrera. I think he can pull it off. I think he's a hard guy to beat. I don't think Kareem Mayfield can knock him out. So I think that gives him a very good advantage for Herrera if he can come forward, cut the ring off, cut those angles off, and attack him.
The other hard-hitting headline, of course, coming from ESPN's Friday Night Fights as well, Glenn Johnson this past Friday in a post-fight interview that wasn't aired on ESPN, talking to Joe Tessitore and Teddy Atlas. Excuse me. He had mentioned that he will retire from the sport of boxing after 70 career fights. The Road Warrior, so much respect for him, and a bit disappointing to see him go because he's been absolutely everywhere in right around the middleweight division and thereabouts. He was a part of the Super 6 World Boxing Classic. He's had multiple titles, tons of title bouts. In fact, more than half of his losses actually came in title fights. So he always fought the best of the best. He was one of the last of a dying breed.
Yeah, like we were saying at the top of the show, it was very, you know, it's a good way to go out. Kind of, he kind of went out just the way exactly his career has been. He's always been an interesting guy to watch. You never know. He's one of the guys that can pull out any upset out there, you know, and he's been in some tough battles, got screwed a few times, or in some close controversial decisions. You know, he was hard to stop, you know, so it's a great career. Just like I said, I'm still kind of shocked that it was on a Friday night fight because I've been so accustomed to him on pretty decent, you know, Saturday cards, you know, whether it be Showtime or HBO.
He's been on so many good fights, and I think it's better to see him retire now, though, than become a gatekeeper, because being a gatekeeper was never something that he was really about.
Right. And that's what, you know what, that, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one thing I want to commend him for, and he did a great job of that. He knew when to retire. Man, like, do a lot of these old guys who had great careers just like being a gatekeeper? I mean, I'm glad that he didn't want that for himself, and that's good. It's good to see that.
Well, it's like an addiction in a way. I think that these guys, they've been fighting since they were so young. It's the only thing they know, and it's so difficult to know when it's time to call it quits. Guys always tend to struggle with that, and good for Glenn Johnson for getting out, I think, at right the right time, too, because it's been a while since he's really been the old Glenn Johnson. The Glenn Johnson from 2004, for example, who was the fighter of the year for Ring Magazine and for multiple outlets. He left us with a lot of great memories, though. To you, what is the defining moment of Glenn Johnson's career?
Oh, man.
There's a lot.
I know. I'm thinking Roy Jones. Right now, I'll say
Antonio Tarver, perhaps.
You know, Tarver too. That one was good. That's another good one. So yeah, I would say that and the Roy Jones.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's been all over the place. Sad to see him go, but a great character and did a lot of good for the sport of boxing. Of course, here on The Boxing Fix, where boxing addicts come to get their fix, we're far from the only show on the Leaves in the Ring stable.
Right. Now, we have Monday nights at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. We have Noche de Boxeo for all the Spanish speakers out there. You know, it's a great show. It's just in Spanish. They talk boxing and everything out there. Then also Thursdays, we got Leave It in the Ring Radio hosted by, Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya and the man behind the Swiss Sports, just like for our show, David Chan, man, the master behind it. So great shows, man. And then all you boxing acts need to get your Undisputed Fight magazine at UndisputedFightMag.com. Get your new issue. And then if I'm not mistaken, you get the issue and you get the next one's free, if I'm not mistaken. So go ahead and pick that up, especially if you're a big-time boxing addict. You know, you need to get your fix, get it there.
It's a great deal, plenty of great stuff. I write for it, you do. Plenty of great writers at Leave It in the Ring that are a part of it. So you're going to be sure to want to check those out for all of your boxing needs. Here, of course, we got the radio shows as well. Plenty of great stuff, so you're going to want to check all of that out. We're going to have Ryan Bivens coming on the show in just a few minutes to let us know just what we should be looking for in boxing, fights that we may not have seen, stuff that may have fallen under the radar and wasn't on American television. Of course, one of those, perhaps Hernan Marquez, he fought to a majority decision against Fernando Lumacod in Culiacan, Sinaloa, Mexico, on Saturday night. Hernan Marquez, who in his two fights against Luis Concepcion really made himself known to a lot of people that wouldn't have known about him before. Very talented kid at just 23 years of age.
Yeah, it's just, like we also said earlier, it's just the opponent, it's hard to judge on how much talent he has because of the competition that he tends to face at times and the lack of it, you should say, at times. You know, the competition level hasn't been always that great. But I think he's talented and he's very entertaining for the most part.
Yeah, they call him Tyson Marquez.
Yeah.
And, personally, I know this is a bit of a different tangent, but I don't know why we need so many Tysons. You know, everyone's got to be like Little Tyson, stuff like that. Enough with that. You know, there was one like hello. His only two losses, Richie Meprinom, which he later avenged. As a matter of fact, he just beat on Meprinom before he fought Lumacod. That was on March 24th. That was a unanimous decision, 98-92, 96. 7.93. The loss was against Nonito Donair. Marquez was down in each of rounds 5 and 8, down once. So he was outclassed by Nonito Donair, but that was back in 2010. Clearly, he's got a ton of talent and so much potential in the super flyweight division and beyond.
Definitely. And that's the thing. He needs to just keep going and you know, try to stay relevant. He needs to just be get that exposure. You know, it'd be nice to get him more on the Showtime, you know, maybe Showbox, whatever it may be. Get him some exposure would be great for him because he is exciting. He's exciting to watch. And he's got some power there, man. He's got some pop. He could do it.
Yeah, he definitely could. Very entertaining fellow to watch in the ring. Like I mentioned, his fight against Luis Concepcion, the first one, fight of the year 2011. If you haven't seen that, I'm sure Ryan Bivens can hook you up. Ryan Bivens, formerly of Sweet Boxing. You can follow him on Twitter at Sweet Boxing. You can also listen to him in just a few moments when he calls into the show. You too can call in. I'll give out that number one more time, 347-215-7598. At this time, we'll have Ryan coming on the show. Ryan, good to have you on the program once again.
Yeah, good to be here.
Yo, what's going on, Ryan, man? So what did you see this weekend, man? What are some fights out there that those fight fans need to get on?
Well, there's one card that I haven't been able to see yet. I'll be able to see it either later tonight or early tomorrow, and that's the Fox Deportes card. I heard that the Edwin Diaz Jesus Silvestre fight for the interim WBA strawweight title, I heard that was good, so I plan on checking that out. But what I have seen, among what I have seen, that you haven't talked about, I don't think you have, was the Telemundo main event on Friday, which was Julian Rivera versus Edgar Jimenez. That was a 12-round split decision, close fight, you know. I'm sure, you know, if you had 10 people scored, you know, you'd have 4 scored one way, 6 scored the other way, so that's well worth watching.
Nice, nice. Now, you know, I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned it to me earlier on Twitter, you did some sparring with Hank Lundy, right?
Yeah. Sometimes he comes to my gym to get some work. The gym I fight out of is the Mitch Allen gym. It's 57th in Haverford. So last week I got in 2 sessions with Lundy. One of them was for 9 rounds, and he practically had to beg me to come out for the 9th round. And man, I was exhausted. So yeah, he's in ridiculous shape. You know, his opponent has a tough road ahead of him.
Right. So he's been looking good though, as far as sparring goes, from what you've seen.
Yeah, you know, he's a strong guy. You know, he doesn't run out of gas. I mean, people see him get knocked down in fights, but you know, that's, you know, a matter of getting, you know, caught in the right spot, you know, when he didn't expect it. But yeah, as you say,
right.
He gets up, he fights back even harder. You know, he's not a fragile fighter.
True. Great. Now, thanks, man. Thanks, Ryan, for coming on, man. And I said, look, give your plugs, actually, for the website.
Yeah, the website is sweetboxing.wordpress.com. You can see all the major fights and the minor ones from the weekend. The British fights, you know, between Amir Khan and Danny Garcia, along with Derek Chisora and David Haye, definitely brought in the most traffic. It amazes me how popular they are.
Right. Well, thanks for joining us, Ryan. It's always nice having you on, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
On the show, Ryan.
Have a good one.
You know, be sure to check him out on Twitter. I'm not sure there's anybody out there that watches just as much boxing as Ryan Bivens does. Just boxing tweets 24/7, watching just about every single fight, international and domestic, under the sun. Great, great boxing encyclopedia. Almost up now. It's always a lot of fun to have him on the program. A couple of fights to make note of at the Citizens Business Arena in Ontario, California. 2 fights on Televisa, the Mexican television channel. Gracio Garcia improves to 19-0 with 13 knockouts. picking up the unanimous decision over Adolfo Landero, who falls to 22-26-2. That's not a pretty record. That was for the WBC Youth World Super Bantamweight title. He dropped Landeros in round number 7, but could finish him off. Did look very, very good, though. 100-89, 99-90, 98-91 on those scorecards. In the flyweight division, Mariana Juarez picked up the WBC female flyweight title over Shindo Go. Go drops to 10-2. Juarez improves to 35-5-3. With 16 knockouts, it was a split decision. Very, very, very close fight. And as far as female fights go, I'll be honest, I don't watch a whole lot of them. I'll watch Holly Holm and, you know, perhaps a couple big fights. Now that I'm on the show, of course, I tend to watch even more boxing than I did before, but this is a fun fight.
It definitely was. It was all kind of not that far from where I'm at, you know, in L.A., but I didn't check it out. But it was funny. I was looking at photos of the weigh-in, and that's what caught my attention. I was like, Randy, this looks like these girls can get down. Was it Mariana? Or she, you know, she was all ripped up, and I was able to catch her. It looked good. It was an interesting fight. So she looked good and pulled off the victory.
Yeah, no, my apologies. It was actually a Carlos Rafael Jr. who fought against Horacio Garcia. According to, it's interesting, it's one of those rare situations where you've got conflicting reports from BoxRec and everyone else, where some reports will say that he fought Zarate Jr. I struggle to understand how this stuff even happens and how you get mix-ups like that and people who report and say different things and websites that say they're all about boxing records. BoxRec actually doesn't have the Derek Chisora and David Haye fight listed. And with that, you know something? Well, let me do my first rant. Get it out of the way right now as part of Rants and Raves. Before I talk about Sunday, just because this is the perfect segue for it, I will rant for BoxRec because BoxRec has not been completely up to snuff lately. I don't know if it's like a protest against this heavyweight fight between Haye and Chisora or what, but the fight was never listed on BoxRec. It's still not on BoxRec. They have the news about Haye and Chisora. There's a picture of the two on the website, but those aren't credited for fighting each other on BoxRec. And to me, BoxRec is such a widespread source for boxing knowledge that you just got to be up to date on this stuff at all times. I don't see how hard it is to enter this stuff into the system. And it's such a great website. I hope that it's not going to be falling behind like this anymore. But there is, now that I've gotten that out of the way, there is one more to take note of. There was a fight today, as a matter of fact, in the United Kingdom Stadium of Light, home of Sunderland Football Club, one of the English Premier League teams. Jason Booth lost to Willie Casey. Willie improves to 14-2 with 9 knockouts. It was a unanimous decision win, 115-114, 115-114, 116-112 for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title. That's a pretty fun fight for its course, the 12 rounds, too, with Willie Casey picking up the victory in the United Kingdom. I figured that was worth a mention as well. A rare Sunday fight. All right, I apologize. I believe that we've lost Josh McDaniel.
I'm back.
Oh, there he is. Okay, there he is. I thought you dipped off the board for 1 minute, but you are back. We have been doing a couple of technical difficulties all night tonight. But with 10 minutes to go on the program, remember, if you do want to call in, you can at 347-215-7598. Let's head to the rants and raves. What do you want to rip on in the sport of boxing, Josh?
There's kind of two things. I'm going to first talk about the one I actually told you about when we were discussing this. Excuse me, man. Man, when can us fans just get things together, man? Tom versus Garcia was empty, man. No one was there. And it's like, come on, you got to support boxing, all these boxing fans, you know, like, why aren't, you know, they're not there in Vegas to watch such a great fight and they miss out on a great card. And just empty is kind of unbelievable. I thought this was a fight. It's sad that people were talking bad about this fight and not giving Garcia even a shot, although I see really much of a shot, I wasn't talking bad about this fight. I thought this was a good fight. I never thought there was nothing wrong with it, but I've seen countless people saying, oh, this shouldn't even be taking place, this and that. Well, look, all you that didn't show up, because he's not happy. That's not a great fight. You know, we need to start getting more people in the seats. You know, kind of like how where I'm gonna rave about it a little bit on just like Hay and Chisora. Look at how well they did. Those are fans, man. That's what.
Well, it's also a little bit different. You've got two British fighters fighting in Great Britain. Over here, you've got essentially a transplant. You took Amir Khan from the United Kingdom and brought him to the United States. American fans, by and large, unless you're in Las Vegas, they're not financially, no matter how good the undercard is, with all of those prospects. It's such a shame because you would think that these big-level fights that these prospects would be getting a great showcase on these cards, but I'm afraid they don't. When it's like Amir Khan in the main event, and there's something he can sell out arenas in the UK, and I think he should do that because maybe it's just that I don't know the actual business aspect of the sport that well, but I would think that even if the American market has to watch it at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that having Amir Khan sell out, you know, 20,000 seats at an arena in the UK, that's got to be more money than selling however many he sold at the Mandalay Bay because there weren't that many people there.
Definitely. And that's what just kind of baffles me. He does bring a big crowd, though, normally. And Mandalay Bay is small. It's not that big. And they couldn't sell it out. And at least fill more seats, at least. No, that's the thing. That kind of is what bothers me. I'm shocked. It's more of I'm shocked than I'm upset about it. I expect a lot more.
The Home Depot Center in Carson, California for the Renito Ronaire fight, that was empty.
I got to bring up California all the time, man.
Oh, I'm not just trying to rip on California. It just so happens that all the stuff I want to rip on takes place there. So I've got nothing to get the state or the Dodgers, just the fans. So, moving on, how about this? Luis Pabon, if you saw the Hey Chisora fight, it was just such horrendous officiating. I cannot believe that they let this man continue to officiate fights. He is downright awful. Inserts himself when he doesn't belong inserting himself. He just got flat out confused, stopped, I believe it was either round number three or round number four in the Hey Chisora fight, with a few seconds to go in the round because he was just, like, so totally out of it. This man is terrible. And for once, I agree with Dan Rayfield of ESPN on something. He was blasting him on the Epics telecast for being down poor. But the Marco fight when he fought Hugo Hernangareta, he didn't do a good job officiating that fight. Just across the board, there's some absolutely horrendous jobs by Luis Pabon of Puerto Rico. What do you got to do to get decent judges and refs? It seems as though with these title fights, you can either get a good referee and horrible judges, or vice versa, good judges but a horrible referee. What's it going to take? They're watching these fights too. Why are they still letting Luis Pabon get these big, big fights? Because he just ruins them.
I just find it funny that he does continue to get these fights. Because that's the first thing I noticed when I saw the referee. Like, I can't recognize the name, but it's just I noticed his face. I'm like, dude, like how you recognize like crazy, and that's when you know it's bad when you recognize the ref's face. You know, you shouldn't even be able to see a ref. That's how you want your ref, you know, not around. You know,
if you're not an announcer or a hardcore fan of the sport, if you don't know the referee's name, that is a good thing because it means a couple things. For one thing, you're getting a good fight. The fighters aren't clinching on each other and copping the field in between punches every single time, and just, you know, hugging and wrestling around on the ropes, because you get fights like that too. And of course the referee has to separate them, but it also means that the referee isn't constantly inserting himself when he doesn't belong. And that's exactly what Luis Pabon does. There's nobody in the sport worse than him. I don't think it's almost as though he doesn't grasp exactly what's going on. And he just doesn't understand when to butt in and when to butt out. He's just an absolutely horrendous referee.
Yeah, I totally agree. I couldn't disagree with you on that one.
Yep, so now that's done it for the rants. What do you have for raves?
Wait, I'm going to change up my mind. I was going to talk about how great the fans and everything was and, you know, for the Hate to fight, but I'm going to switch it up because I'm going to kind of diss myself and throw in some compliments to Garcia and the Garcia family, because actually last night with a good buddy of mine, D-Style, on Twitter, we had a post-fight show on his network over at Hellstorm Sports, and we happened to get a call in from Danny Garcia's mother and his girlfriend, and Garcia's mother kind of ripped me a new one in a very nice way. I told her that I wasn't expecting that. She told me that, well, I'm sorry that you weren't expecting it, but just like all the doubters, you're going to keep doubting and you're going to get disappointed. I was like, you know what? Hey, that's fine. That's fine and fair. So big props to Garcia. He did a great job. Great fight. He's getting what he deserved. He's training hard and he's up on top of the game. See where he goes from here now. And props to his family and props to his mother and his girlfriend. And his girlfriend, I'm going to quote, said, Khan got what he deserved. God doesn't like ugly.
Well, that's I'm not going to touch that one. The whole Garcia clan just has so they're certainly good at hyping up fights and throwing some stuff like that. Plenty of trash talking from them all, except for Danny, it seems. Danny is so quiet and – or not so much quiet. I suppose it's not the best way to say it. But compared to his father, for example, he's much more of a – as he told Jim Lamp was telling the story in the telecast, he looks at himself as a good guy. He says, you know, don't judge me by my father's antics and by what anyone else says. Judge me by me. I'm a solid guy. You get that feeling. You know, he's a solid fighter. Fantastic performance. I want to commend the television coverage on this past weekend. First of all, anyone who knows me loves that I love ESPN. Joe Tessitore and Teddy Atlas do a very good job. Bernardo Osuna is tolerable in the studio. He's not great, but he's sorry. And he at least knows the sport, so that's why I give him a bit of a pass, at least for even though I don't find him to be the best in-studio host they've had either. I do miss Brian Kenny after he left the MLB Network. HBO wasn't riding the Amir Khan bandwagon too much. I mean, they were riding it, but at the end of the fight, they definitely gave Danny Garcia his due. And after how critical I've been of HBO for all this time, it's good to see them getting something right and doing it all right. But I am quite a fan of the Epix TV coverage. Now, Bruce Beck, who's more of a New York personality aside from these fights that he does, he wasn't the greatest when he first came on, but you can actually see him learning on the job and doing much, much better. So he's got decent chemistry with Dan Rafael. Although, well, when Dan Rafael, leave it in the ring, Dave Duenas, he had a very funny tweet about this, about how he just feels so uncomfortable when Dan's staring at the camera and talking, because he doesn't really have that charismatic face, so to speak, whereas Joe Tessitore's got like a small smile coming from his lips. He's got like the eyes working. Dan Rafael just has this blank, deer in headlight stare, not moving his head around. It's just like looking at a photograph with moving lips. It's the most uncomfortable thing, but I do think that he has relatively decent insight, even if he makes it too much about him. And Sugar Ray Leonard was great in place of Freddie Roach. I love Freddie Roach. I have a lot of respect for him. But as far as announcing fights go, I don't enjoy listening to Roach, because as sad as it is, his condition is such that he has a lot of trouble talking. And personally, I would rather hear somebody like Sugar Ray Leonard, although I do love what Freddie Roach has to say, too. With Sugar Ray Leonard, Dan Rafael, and Bruce, they definitely had better chemistry.
I kind of agree and disagree with you on a few of the things on the rave. You know, it's your rave, so that's all good. But let me just say, I thought HBO still were riding the con. I'm not going to say the words I want to use. So they're riding the con bandwagon, right? I don't know. I thought so even from the beginning. But on the Epics, I've never really seen it, but I'm not a fan of the State Puff Marshmallow Man, Dan Rayfield. you know,
that's so a new
I'm,
one.
Not, I'm not a big fan of his. I would rather listen to Freddie Roach through 2 hours, three, four, let's go 6 hours of boxing talk with Freddie Roach than have to listen to Dan Raphael talk. But unfortunately, I didn't see it on Epic. I was watching it on the stream because, you know, we all know Mike Greif with Dish Network and all that crap, and I'm not even going to get into the them because that would just put me on another level of festivity. Yes, that's my word. And so I can't say too much on that, but I really think I was on Con, and, you know, you know what pissed me off with that is they were attacking Con's dad at that the pre-fight, you know, meeting that they had with the fighters. It's like, you know, they kept on attacking the dude. It was like, why you guys just, I don't know. I just didn't find it fair or whatever. Also, with Garcia's dad, the shame was quite hilarious. That's funny. The guy, all I know is he said, I never met a Pakistani that can't fight. That's all I said. That's like me, it's the same thing as me saying I never met a Puerto Rican who can't swim. I was rolling when I was, that guy's funny. That guy, if he wasn't a trainer, he should be a comedian.
and poor Garcia, you could see Danny wasn't totally loving his father saying that stuff. But hey, Tank Lundy was saying earlier, it's an entertainment industry, and these guys are definitely entertaining. Anything else you want to touch on before we end the episode tonight?
Oh man, it was just, you know, since I didn't really touch on it too much, a great job over there, and you know, for the Hayes to sort by, you know, selling out the stadium, and there's some rain. They didn't care, man. It was like they were at a, like, I'm going to use the comparison again, like at a soccer match. Like, they did not care. Hail, sleet, rain, don't matter, snow, fire, brimstone, whatever. They were there to watch that fight, and it was good. That's good to see. And, you know, that was a great job to all the fans out there. And, you know, they can teach a lot of us out in the U.S. how to, you know, show support to the sport that they, you know, love.
Oh, yeah, and we had some very good fights throughout the course of the weekend. Just to take a quick look ahead at what's coming up next week on this coming weekend, not quite as strong as what we saw this week, although nothing compared to what we have coming up in 2 weeks. Miguel Acosta and Art Hovhannisyan, they both make their returns. That's going to be on Showbox from the Chumash Casino. Roman Morales, he's undefeated at 10-0 with 6 knockouts. He'll take on Alexis Santiago. It's been a while since we've had a good Showbox card on TV. Quite happy to see that coming back.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking that the other day too. It's like the Showbox has been kind of like out lately. You know, we haven't seen much.
Yeah, and especially since Showtime is so preferable to any other television network that's out there, it's always a game when they kind of go missing in action like that sometimes. From the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Telefatura, Argenis Mendez put in an IBF super featherweight title eliminator, fights Martin Honorio. That'll be on Telefatura. Ed Paredes and Vivian Harris will square off for the WBC Latino and WBO Latino welterweight title straps as well. Jorge Pimentel taking on Joan Guzman on the undercut of that as well. And, of course, on HBO, Adrian Broner and Vicente Escobedo for the WBO super featherweight title. Broner undefeated at 23-0 and 19 knockouts, taking on Escobedo. Keith Thurman, who's undefeated at 17-0 with 16 knockouts, takes on Orlando Lora in the 10-round welterweight undercard fight as well. So does Omar Figueroa, a name you may know well, 18-0-1 with 15 knockouts. He fights Dominic Salcido. What's your take on next week's fights? Anything?
You said Joan Guzman's fighting?
Yep.
I like Joan Guzman. I've always been a big fan of his, so I'm excited to see that for sure. I'm excited to see the Escobedo and Broner after we talked to Joel Diaz, you know, saying that Broner's going to lose to Escobedo. I'm interested in that, too. So it should be a good weekend of some fights, some fast kids fighting, you know. I mean, I always like to watch Broner fight. Curious to see if he's going to have his dad brush his hair and everything. So
I'm sure he will.
You know.
That card at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida, by the way, on Telefatura, 74 rounds of scheduled action in all. You want to talk about getting your money's worth as a fan. Those are the type of local cards that are just absolutely great. So for all of us here, on Leave It in the Ring Radio on the Boxing Fix. David Chen helping us out. Returning to the soundboard this week. Thanks, David. Thank you, Josh. For everyone here at Leave It in the Ring and the Boxing Fix, where boxing addicts come to get their fix, I'm Joel Sebastianelli. Thanks for coming along for another night of Boxing Talk. Be sure to tell your friends and family all about us, and remember to support those who support the sport.